Dette en podcast fra Dagens Næringsliv.
Hei og hjertelig velkommen til nok en episode av «Jeg kan ingenting om vin». I dag så befinner vi oss nok en gang I Burgund, men Merete, hvor jeg?
Nå jeg I vinbaren til greve Louis-Michel Léger Belair.
Altså ekte greve?
Ja, det tror jeg.
Ja, du kan jeg ikke kalle deg Komt.
Han heter jo Komt.
Ja, Komten.
Komten.
Men hva det med han?
Nei, han har klart å ta tilbake en familieslotte, da, eller domene, som var egentlig lå ganske brakk, og har snudd til å bli en av de beste produsentene I hele, og mest ettertakta, og ikke minst dyreste produsentene I hele Burgund.
Fordi denne kommunen heter jo Vaune-Romanée, og da har jo Romanée-navnet kommer jo fra den mest kjente vinmarken.
Romanée Conti.
Ja, men Romanée Conti, sin vinmark heter jo Romanée Conti, mens vinmarken til Comten selv
ja, heter La Romanée.
Nettopp, så det egentlig den vinmarken som da
sånn sett, så kan du ta det.
Den aller mest kjente, og den ligger da ved siden av Romanée Conti.
Ja, rett bak.
Ja. Ja. Mm. Så har det vært noen spørsmål om de har vært samme?
Ja, det et spørsmål som jeg tror ikke noen har et svar på. Neppe at det har vært samme vinmark, faktisk. Men det I så fall så langt tilbake inn I tid at ingen har det på papiret. Sånn.
Og hva slags viner lager han?
Han lager jo så å si 100% Pinot Noir. Han har vel et par ein, Pity, fra Nuit Saint-Georges, ellers resten.
Chardonnay fra, altså fra Cotonou, som ikke så vanlig.
Nei. Men ellers alt Pinot.
Men det mulig å få tak I vinen hans?
Nei.
På restaurant kan det være.
På restaurant får du alltid tak I alt.
Hvis du har dype lommer.
Ja, veldig dyre. Og I begynnelsen når han solgte sin La Romanée, så kostet det sånn 2000 kroner. Sant? I dag prisen, det vet ikke jeg, 70-80 på...
1000?
Ja. Han prøver jo å ta igjen Romanée Conti, da har han kanskje klart det. Jeg husker ikke helt eksakt prisen, men det I Norge når det blir solgt. På spesialbestilling, mens utlandet det vel sikkert enda dyrere. Så det er, han har snudd på 20 år da, men altså, jeg husker at jeg kjøpte La Romanée og åpnet bare for smaker på en random tirsdag og tenkte at ja, ja.
Oi.
Men det skjer ikke lenger, for å si det sånn.
Men da skal du ha tjukk lommebok.
Ja. Ja. Men du får jo tak I det. Altså, alt umulig å få tak I hvis du vil. Du kan kjøpe det på internasjonale nettbutikker, du kan kjøpe det på restaurant, du kan kjøpe det her I vinbutikken hans I Vaune-Romanée. Men her prisen ganske hinsides.
Kommer hit?
Ja.
Okay. Har du sett han mange ganger?
Ja, jeg møtte han flere ganger.
Hvordan ser han det?
Han ser aristokratisk fransk ut. Har alltid røde bukser. Så det, hvis du ser en mann med pantalon rouge, så ja. Så jeg litt usikker på om man har krysset Atlanteren, eller om man bare later sånn.
Hvis du greve, så trenger du ikke å forholde deg til den regelen, tenker jeg.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Thomas. Nice to meet you.
Hello, Louis-Michel. Sorry to be late.
No problem.
So thank you so much for having us.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming.
From what I understand, the domain as it is established today is quite new, but it comes with quite a lot of history.
We have been established in Vaune-Romanée since 1815, then a bit more than two centuries. The estate has been created by my ancestor, Louis Léger Belair, who was a general with Napoleon I. Mm-hmm. He fell in love with a lady from Burgundy, and he arrived in Burgundy. He established the estate there. She already has some vineyards. Her family has bought some vineyards. On one day, they married together, and he bonded together the seven parcels of La Romanée between 1815 and 1826. The Marais family was probably the first family that established a négoce company in Nuit Saint-Georges in 1720. Then by bonding together and married together, the son of the general and this lady, they combined their strengths on their vineyards as well. And they continued to buy some vineyards during all the 19th century to have more than 60 hectares. 60 hectares in the end of the 19th century made, it's probably one of the five or eight biggest estates in Burgundy. The family went really up during all the 19th century, early 20th century as well, on a mix of unprepared succession, fight in the family, made all the estate fall in 1933. It's really the worst period for the wine world. It's depression in Europe coming from the US, 29 depression arrived in 31, 32 in Europe. Then economy wasn't that good. It's also the end of the phylloxera crisis. Phylloxera arrived 1877, 78, something like that, in Burgundy, destroyed all the vineyards at the end of the 19th century. And the real evolution of the production was just before World War II, and mostly after World War II. We stopped making wine in the 30s. My great-grandfather died due to the war in 1941. My father was too young to cover the estate. Decided to be an officer, and I grew up with a father who was a general. Between Paris and Germany, I didn't grow up in Vaughan, but I spent all my holidays in Vaughan. And since the 30s, we had farmers working for us, and we were selling all the wines to the négoce. But we only had 3 hectares of vineyards. It was nothing, not enough to live with. It was just enough to pay the roof on the invoices of the chateau, but that was it. My father was living with his treatment for the army. By growing up between Germany and Paris, not very happy to be in big cities, not very, very happy to be in Germany. I was in Baden-Baden. It was a very nice city, but nice when you are between 75 and 95 years old, not where you are an 8-year-old kid. And I spent my summer here, and I was really happy to be here. After the first summer here, when we were in Germany, I was 8, it was in 1981. It was time to go back to Germany and say, no, I don't want to go back to Germany. And my parents said, okay, go to the car. So 1, 2, 3 times, on the third time, I went to the car. But we had a long discussion on the way back because my parents said, wait, you want to stay there? I said, because I'm just happy to be here. I just enjoy being in Vaughan Romanée. I have my friends, I can make what I want. And then I said to my parents, I want to live in Vaughan Romanée when I will be elder. And the parents say, okay, if you want to be in Vaughan Romanée, you probably will be involved in wine business, négoce, winemaker, we don't know. You have to be an engineer first. If you're not an engineer, you won't have the key of the house. I knew what was an engineer at that time. I say, deal. And when I was 17, they refreshed my mind and say, okay, if you want to live in Vaughan, you have to be an engineer. Then I became an engineer in agriculture. Agronomics, and I did also a master's degree in wine business on an energy school for 2 years. But my first decision was not to be a winemaker, it was to live in Vaughan Romanée. And I took over the estate in 2000, and step by step we began with 1.5 hectare of vineyards, and we have now 14.5, mostly in Vaughan Romanée. And I said that I like to see my vineyards from my terrace. Then north of limit is Clos Vougeot, and south of limit is Nuit Saint-Georges. And I won't go farther than that.
What is your goal, and what is you want to achieve with your with the domain now?
Well, how to say that I have a goal? I think one of my concerns was to say, okay, Ligier Belair was a big name in the wine world on the 19th century, was not anymore in the 20s, why not being back in the 21st? I think it was one part of my goal. Other part of my goal was to say, okay, you could be average in everything, but I'm not sure that you have pleasure to be average with everything. that I wanted to make the best wine that I can, but the best wine for me, probably not for the others, the wine that I want to drink. I was lucky enough when I took over the estate to have a father that was in general and said, and he was governing a bit his own estate that he rented to me. And he says to me at the beginning, first, you cannot call that Domaine du Comte Ligé-Belair. Now it's Domaine du Comte Ligé-Belair, but in 2000, when I took over, I was the Vicomte Ligé-Belair, I was the son of the Comte. My father was the sixth Comte of the family, I'm the seventh now, since he passed away a few years ago. But when I took over, I said, okay, I want to call my estate Domaine du Comte Ligé-Belair, because I will be the Comte Ligé-Belair later. Why calling that a different name, that Comte Ligé-Belair? My father said, no, I'm the Comte Ligé-Belair, you're the Vicomte Ligé-Belair. I don't want that you put my title to bad wine. Then first you have to make good wine. 2000, first vintage, good wine. He said, luck of the beginner. Easy. Okay. 01, again, good wine. I just began. Show me that you are able to make good wine. 02, good wine. He said, yeah, the wines are good, but everyone makes good wine in 02. Okay. let's continue. 03, good wine. I said, okay, now, challenging vintage, 03, you make good wine, then you can change the name. On between 02 and 03, the label changed from Domaine du Vicomte Ligé-Belair to Domaine du Comte Ligé-Belair because it allows me to use his title on that.
Yeah.
And he said to me, okay, you're my son, I trust you, you're an engineer, perfect, you made what I asked. I'm a general, I know my taste, I know your taste and your skills, but it would be interesting to have somebody else to give you a few views about how to make wine. And I think we can ask to one of my old and close friends who has understood everything from planting the vineyards to putting a cap on the label, on the bottle. And the name of this guy was Henri Jaillet. And Henri Jaillet was a very close friend of my father because during World War II, they were in Vendôme together. The Germans were here, but they were. Henri was slightly older than my father, probably 3 or 4 years older than my father. They knew each other very well. On early 2000, Henri was really a wine star. In the 80s, he wasn't. In the early 90s, he was so and so. In early 2000, he was 80 something, but he was a wine star.
To our listeners, that was like a really.
Yeah.
Big star of the
then,
wine world.
Then my father called him, or he said, okay, no problem. He came at the estate and was here for the harvest. Just came for 15 minutes during the harvest and said, oh, if I were you, I would do that. One information. I would be back for the summer. Then did what he said, but one information is not the way to make wine. And he came back during the summer, taste the wine and say, okay, the wines are good. What did I say to you? You say me that. Why? You say me that because, and I was able to explain him why he said me that, connected with the vintage, with when we pick and whatever. And say, okay, you're smart. You understood that we'll be back. And he came back every harvest. If I were you, I would do that. He came after during summer and said, okay, what did I say to you? He did that until 04. In 05, he was sick. In 06, he died during harvest. But I was lucky enough to have him for 5 years. Then I close this goal question. When I took over the estate, I said to Henri, do you have, if I want to be on the cover page of the wine magazine, was very fashion at that time, do I need to make this wine that I don't like? Because the people that were on the cover page of the magazine early 2000 with Burgundy were making dark, very intense, very tannic, very black wine. It was a real fashion at that time, and I think it was the fact that Burgundy want to show that we were able to have high color when we had light color in the past, and we were able to have big tannins when we had light tannins at that time. I said, I don't like this kind of wine. Do I have to make this wine to be well known? And Henri says, no, because first, you will never produce enough wine for the whole world. Then at some point, you will find some people that have the same taste that you have, even if it's a bad taste. And first, you have to make wine that you like, because if you don't sell them, you can drink them. You laugh about that, but it's super important. I know plenty of winemakers that don't do the wine for themselves, and they don't drink their own wine. They are drinking wine for the market, which is perfect at some point. But the market is changing. You are changing as well. Mm. But if you don't drink your own wines, you cannot do that with passion. My goal is to make wine that my wife, Constance, and myself like, that we can drink, because you are spending the whole year with the wine. I was slightly late today because I was labeling some balls. I was also labeling the ball that I brought for you today to taste together. It's passion for doing something well. We are here in La Cuverie de Vaune, which is this wine bar that we have opened a year ago. It's not only a wine bar, it's a grocery shop, it's a cafe, it's a wine bar, it's a dining room, it's rooms. And every single thing is made on the same level of exigence that we have at the estate and that we have for the bottle of wine that we have. Mm. You have to be exigent everywhere to give the best that you can from yourself. Making a wine is a succession of 250 small decisions, from the plantation to putting the cap on to the wine. It's on the grafting, it's on the pruning. We had a pruning session yesterday with a guy that came for my team to teach them to do better pruning. He was here last spring as well to do a better debutting, because everything is like that. But it's also, okay, the label is like that. How can we improve the quality of the label? How can we be sure that there is no hole or something like that at some point? Everything is, you have to think about everything, and I like to do that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You talked about you make wine for your own taste. Would you say that your taste have changed and that the style has evolved?
Yes, sure. I think that my taste has probably slightly changed. Yes, for sure. You became an adult when your taste is slightly more bitter than sweet. It's fun because the market is requesting to have wine that are aging well, but that are easy to drink young. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago, it was impossible to do both. Now you can with global warming, which is really good for Pinot Noir. At which point will be good, and until when it will be good, I don't know. But we are on a golden age of Burgundy. I think Burgundy is 25% or 30% of organic certified estate. 25%, 30%, I would say. Which won't go to 80%, but step by step, we are going higher. I usually say that it takes you between 7 to 10 years to clean your soil from herbicides. It takes you 5 years to clean your soil from pesticides. How to clean your soil? Super simple. You have to wait for the rain. And rain is washing the soil. You need to have rain and frost, because the rain is washing the soil, but you need to have a lot of rain to wash the soil. And you also need to have frost, because the frost is opening the files of clay to allow to the water to go into the different files, okay, and to wash as well, because you are washing around, but you have to wash inside as well. Then we had some frost last week, and I say, cool, I like that. It was not that big, but we have 5-6 days of cold, -2, -3, which is nothing for you in Norway. But for us, it's already a lot. And say, I was thinking that maybe we can have a real strong winter that we need, because a strong winter saved me probably 2 or 3 years of washing the soil, because it's really opening the soil. Then to have the effect of the biomedical farming into the wine, there's something more, there's a bit more freshness, there's a bit more delicacy, an extra dimension that I had in the past, that I have noticed on biomedical farming wine I've tasted before. That's why we moved to that. It's not a lubi, or it's not because everyone made that. It's by testing a lot of wines, or drinking much more than testing. Mm-hmm. I'm much more a drinker than a tester. I drink a lot of wines on when the bottle is empty. You just look on the back label and say, oh, it's Biomedical certified Biodivin on Demeter. One time, two times, three times, 10 times, you say, okay, that's probably something behind that. I think that 2013 was probably a very interesting vintage for us, late harvest, but also very interesting because we had this extra dimension. You are changing a few things, fine-tuning, adjusting year by year, and also you are adjusting year by year because every single vintage is different. I like all my wines on the same way, like I like all my kids on the same way, because every year I'm having 19 kids every year now, 19 different cuvées. And I can do that as a winemaker because I'm almost the father of this wine. My wife, for example, don't like Clos du Château. We have Clos du Château Vaudreuil-Manet on our glass, and it's a wine that she never liked. I don't know why. She said, oh, it's not my style, I don't like that. She likes a lot of other wines. For me, I like all the ones I'm producing because if I put my name on that, it's because I assume them. Like if I put my name on my kids, it's because I assume them. And I try to put my name on every single kid that I have.
I guess this is different from vintage to vintage, but for how long would you like to age your wines? It really is it drinkable right now.
Yeah, it's a 2020, but the 2000, Clos du Château, same wine. When you open the bottle, you still have the same pleasure. I think that my wines are probably more stable than some others, just because they are used to see oxygen. Then they are not affected by the oxygen infusion invasion that you can have after bottling or during aging. Then the wines are super stable on age well, but if you have good grapes on the sorting table, you don't have to do anything. The wine will be good. The wine could be good. That is 98% that the wine will be good. You still have 2% to do in the winery. On the winery, on the winery, you can do 2% that will destroy your wine. But he said also there is no sun in the cellar, in that you have your grapes have to be ripe in the cellar. A green tannin, more ripe in your cellar. If a tannin is not ripe at the beginning, it will never be ripe 10 years after. And when people say, oh, you will see in 10 years, it would be rounder, things like that. No, it won't be rounder. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. On the way that you are making wine, especially for the Pinot as well, if it's not ripe, not overripe, not underripe. But the ripeness is probably, on my understanding, the ripeness in the vineyard is 70% of the grapes that are ripe, 15% overripe, 15% underripe. And you have to find this balance. And on the date of the harvest is always a balance. But the balance is not the analysis, is me going on the vineyard, testing the grapes every year, 1 week, 2 weeks before harvest, to begin to have an idea and say, okay. Because I will see a lot of vines, a lot of shoots, and I will see a lot of small grapes that begin to appear and say, oh, interesting. There is more, there is less, there is different thing. That also lets you think, okay, what I will do in July, because green harvest, no green harvest, how much, why do we have that much grapes, why we have so low grapes, different reasons. But I begin to make wine 6 months before, or 5 months before making the wine, because I begin to think about that, I say, okay, well, it's interesting, it's different from last year, and things like that. I'm not on a daily basis now on the vineyard, sadly, or not, I don't know. I've been on a daily basis for the 15 first years, I would say. Now I'm probably a bit less, also because the estate has expanded a bit, and also because we have opened this wine bar, also because we have different things to do. But I'm on a daily basis with my team every morning.
What do you think about the vineyard prices in Burgundy at the moment?
For 20 years, I say they cannot go bigger and bigger. The prices are going bigger and bigger. The fact is today, some people are buying vineyards out from Burgundy, but are buying vineyards in Burgundy, but people from foreign countries are buying that as a trophy, as an ego thing. Okay, I have a successful life, I'm super wealthy. I need to have a flat in New York, a flat in Hong Kong, a yacht, a private plane, on a vineyard. And the vineyard has to be in Burgundy. Mm. Now. Mm. In fact, the bubble will deflate for sure. Mm. The bubble will explode. I hope not, because we all are on the same boat. And we don't have to forget that. That will be interesting. The two next vintage will be interesting, 22 and 23, because there is a bit more wine. Mm. Regarding 19, 20 and 21. And it would be interesting to see the reaction of the estates on how they will deal with slightly serious bigger production.
And worse economy in the world.
Yeah. And worse economy. It's a bad timing.
Yeah.
But that would be interesting at the same time, because you will see who are the estates that are that have real brands and that have worked their own brand because the quality is consistent. Walking the brand is not pushing the brand, it's just having consistency in the quality year by year. I think it was super easy to sell 19, 20 and 21 vintage in Burgundy because good quality vintages on low quantity, on big demand in the world. 22, 23, very good quality as well. Then the quality is not an issue. The quantity is bigger. On the economy, on the demand, is probably different. Wine has become an asset for a lot of people. It can become an asset when your money at the bank is only making 1 or 2% a year. And the wine seems to make 10% a year. When now the market, your money is making much more, 7, 6, 7, 8%, if you put that in the bank in a good way, on the wine, don't make any more 10% because you can make 10% extra every year. I think that some people will begin to balance a bit their assets. But those wine has to be an asset for sure, not. Those wine has to be drunk for sure, yes. That's why you say me a bit personally that my wines are easy to drink now. Yes, they will be easy to drink in 20 years from now. But if you cannot put your asset in the market back, you can drink it. Mm-hmm. It's my desire. And I think that a lot of people have bought wine just to put that in a cellar, to wait and not to drink them. I've heard that in London now, people are coming to a restaurant with their own wine, paying a corkage fee because they want to drink their wine more than keeping them in bond in the warehouse, which is interesting, and I like that because it means more probably that they are not able to sell them anymore and they want to drink it. Perfect.
It's the feeling of the end of the world coming closer. You know?
Yeah, at some point. And also, for a wine that you have bought 20 years ago and that on the paper I've made 10% every year, when you drink it now, do you lose money or don't lose money? In fact, if you put your money at the bank, you will make 20% in 20 years, then you don't lose that much money because the price were weaker, were smaller 20 years ago. Then, okay, at some point, I think that you can drink it because wine is made to be drunk. Move to the other wine, Echezo, same vintage. But I wanted to show you them. We are here in the Clos du Château. The vineyards around us is the Clos du Château. I thought it was interesting to taste that. And now it's Echezo 2020. It's usually tea time, but it's a kind of tea for us. it's a tea with a bit of alcohol. It's only 13% of alcohol, which is okay.
Is it harder to keep it at 13 than it used to be?
Not that much. No, honestly speaking, between 13 and 14, we are in a range that we are almost never over that, unless for super young vines. By example, I have a young vines in the Clos des Grands Vignes, which is a premier cru that we have, and we have 10-year-old vines that we declassify into Nuit Saint-Georges Village that are always over because they don't have the roots that are going deep enough yet. But no, in organic, and I think especially biomimicry farming, I was talking about that last week with one other biomimicry farming estate. I think that we are able to pick with less sugar, to pick with high acidity, and with riper tannins. Mm. Not that bad.
Well. This was both the story and your perspectives was really interesting to us. So thank you so much, and also thank you for the wine.
You're welcome, and I'm happy to share that with you because I'm used to say that I'm making wine to be drunk, not to be tasted. A good bottle is an empty bottle. Wine is made to be shared with friends. That's it. And that's what we're doing today. And I'm happy to see you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Du har nå hørt en podcast fra Dagens Næringsliv.